Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to conservation and careful management of the state's forests to make them more resilient and better habitats for wildlife. Choosewood.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. A good meal can be a time to reflect on growth. Where did that strawberry on your plate come from? How did this space go from empty to restaurant? How did a trainee go from fumbling in the kitchen to legit master chef? When it comes to food and drink, growth can be an especially delicious experience. It can also be a meaningful one. And later in our show, we'll learn about a new effort from members of St. Louis's restaurant industry and how they're helping each other overcome addiction when their jobs include being surrounded by alcohol. But first, let's take a look at spots in St. Louis where you can find ways to stretch your palate through tasty food and drink. And for that, we've got Sauce Magazine Executive Editor Meera Nagarajan. Meera, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's go through the hit list and start with maybe the healthiest option, and that is with Neon Greens, which opened last month in March in the Grove. And actually, the last time that you were on with Jonathan Moxie, the head brewer at Rockwell Beer, you were talking about Neon Greens as you were exiting the station. Tell me about Neon Greens and what it's about.
They are a new salad-centric restaurant, and they are growing their own lettuce. They have a vertical hydroponic garden that is adjacent to their dining space, which used to be occupied by Rise Coffee, which was a really popular shop in the Grove. And the owner, Josh Smith, he has this 400-square-foot little farm where he's growing three different types of lettuce: green oak leaf, Mizuna, and sweet red crisp. There's a conveyor belt that transports the greens from the farm right to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And they're making all their salads using a great amount of this lettuce that they're growing. They're growing the lettuce because they want to serve something that is as fresh as possible because, one, it has more nutrients, and two, it has great flavor.
Yeah. I mean, so it does make a difference in taste.
Absolutely.
I mean, is there a... How would you describe that difference?
I would just say it has like a more vivid flavor. I mean, there are times where everybody who's listening who eats a salad has had a, you know, bite of a salad that just feels like the lettuce is flimsy. It doesn't have a lot of flavor. These are like very crisp, fresh. They have great texture to them. They have a lot of like flavor just because the nutrients are still so vibrant and alive inside of those greens. Mm-hmm. So it really does translate to their salads. You know, we tried a chilled curry salad with this beautiful curry ranch and different roasted vegetables inside. We tried an umami crunch with this gochujang vinaigrette that was really delicious and spicy. Mm-hmm. Also a seeded wedge. So if you love your traditional, you know, blue cheese ranch on a wedge, they have options like that too. But I think it's fun to explore.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing collaborations as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when they first started, they did a Thai salad where they were using the smoked chicken from Grace Meat and Three. So I think they're kind of, they're also, you know, working with other restaurants and providing greens to them. I don't know how much they're doing that now that they're officially open, but I think their aim was to like really get integrated into the restaurant community.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's another one that is in the city called Manileño that opened in February, and that's in the Tower Grove South area. What is it that stood out to you about this space first, Meera?
It's just, it's a beautiful space. They have a dining room. Right when you walk into the bakery. They have a beautiful bakery case with the most colorful pastries in town. And then they have an upstairs dining space that they'll use for dinner, if there's spillover for brunch. It's just a very, like, welcoming space, I found it to be. Like, they really worked on making the space feel like a restaurant. It's not just, you know, something that feels fast and quick. It's just like, it feels like a very cozy space.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of cozy, I mean, home style food is sort of the thing that I was reading about.
Yes, absolutely.
There is a focus on meat at Manileño.
Yes.
You get that right. Is there something special here for the carnivore who's looking to try something either new or just really well done at this restaurant?
I'm so glad you asked that. The lechon, which is their pork belly dish, it has the most shatteringly crisp crust. And then the inside is just unbelievably, like, meltingly tender. It is so, so fantastic. They have a number of, like, traditional dishes. It's a family affair over there. So you mentioned home cooking. The people that own it are siblings. Their mom is in the kitchen making the food. And if you've ever had pancit, which is a traditional Filipino noodle dish, or chicken adobo or pork adobo, which is like the Filipino national dish, they have that as well. But that lechon, oh my God, mm-hmm. Can't miss it.
And speaking of lechon, there's a possibility that they will be doing whole pigs, right?
Yes, yeah, that is definitely an aim for them. And I hope it comes sooner rather than later, because what a show.
Mm-hmm. So there is a food trend that seems to be hitting Chesterfield out in the West St. Louis County area, mm-hmm. and that is Indian fusion.
Yeah.
So Mira, talk to us first about Tikka Tangy.
Tikka Tangy is a little spot. They're at 13441 Olive Boulevard. They have, when I went, I had their tacos. Their taco, is it just like a regular taco? No, it's a naan, piece of naan with an entree inside, and they top it with raw vegetables, and you eat it like a taco. I think it's part of the way that they present it. It's just a new way of eating something that's a very familiar Indian dish, the naan plus whatever the entree it is that you select. They have other things like Mediterranean nachos, or they have like their chicken shawarma plate with rice and, you know, hummus. But I feel like what they're trying to do is make things that maybe if you're not familiar with Indian food, it's presented in a way that maybe people in West County understand a little bit more easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you eat that taco, do you tilt your head?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Definitely.
I just want to make sure that's important. There's also another spot that's opened, and that's Amrut Fusion.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, what I noticed when I went to Amrut is how much cheese is incorporated into their menu. Their dosa, which is a traditional fermented rice batter crepe that's pan-fried, has cheese in it, which is not traditional. They also had a paneer gulistani dish, which was tandoor-cooked pieces of paneer, and they sandwiched it, like two pieces of bread, around a piece of, I think, American cheese in this like glazy, oniony, peppery sauce. And I was thinking about it because on my recent trips to India, I've noticed a lot of restaurants are incorporating cheese on their menus. And I think it has to do with this globalization of Western food brands entering India. And I think these kind of fusion-y ideas are a reflection of that growth that's happening mm-hmm. over there.
And do you think overall that St. Louis is ready for this kind of fusion, or like has it just, it's been happening?
It's been happening.
Okay.
Yeah. So like I was just thinking about Khanna's Desi Vibes, which is also in West County. They have a number of fusion dishes. Black Salt, which was a best new restaurant this past year, they have a number of fusion dishes. And I think a lot of, you know, you can go the route of being super traditional, but I think people are trying to have a little bit of fun with it. Mm-hmm. And it's delicious results, I would say.
Are these places you would take your parents?
I've taken my parents to a number of them. They're tough critics, but I will say that they've enjoyed something everywhere I've taken them.
Okay, that's a positive way to put it. Mm-hmm. Mira Nagarajan is executive editor of Sauce Magazine. You can read all about the new restaurants we talked about today and more at saucemagazine.com. Mira, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, we are going to shift gears here. At the beginning of this segment, I talked about growth, but for workers in the food and hospitality industry, that growth, it can come with a bit of pressure,
high pressure, in fact, very long hours, and easy access to an all-too-common coping tool, and that's alcohol. So here to talk about the challenge of addiction in the restaurant industry and a new support group, I'm joined by Chef Max Breidenketter. Welcome, Max.
Thank you very much for having me.
So addiction obviously is something that can affect anyone. Max, why is it that there is so much of it, though, in the food and hospitality industry?
You know, a lot of it has to do with just the presence of alcohol and drugs within the kitchen and restaurant culture. I mean, the best way I could put it is, you know, if you're somebody struggling with addiction, imagine you go to your office every day and one of your four walls is completely lined in alcohol bottles, just like a bar would be.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of that, plus different things such as a shift drink, you know, you leave work, everybody kind of convenes at the bar afterwards and decompresses after. And a lot of the typical decompression techniques in the industry are largely related or surrounded by alcohol. I mean, there's this long-term stereotype of, you know, kind of the rock star, hard-partying chef. You know, you work all day, and then you go out all night, you wake up, and you do it again. And that's just kind of been a problem that's perpetuated in our industry to the point where, depending on which statistics you may look at, addiction of some form typically falls in the top three as far as by industry with regards to the food and beverage industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last major government survey of substance abuse or misuse by industry, the hospitality industry, was 2015. And at that time, it found that the highest rate of substance abuse, 19%, did come from workers in the food services industry. They also had the highest rate of illicit drug use at 16.9%. Now, that was almost 10 years ago, Max. What do things feel like today? Does that still reflect the reality of what's happening among those who work in the industry that you're in?
It's hard to speak specifically to that exact period 10 years ago, as I wasn't in the industry at that time. But what I can say is the numbers from that study, I believe it was by the SAMSHA, what you see every day does typically reflect that. There mm-hmm. is, from my personal perspective, really no change in that. However, since then, I do think there have been more conversations about it, specifically, you know, related to what we're currently doing with Ben's Friends, which began in 2016, immediately after. And I think just the industry as a whole has had a shift more towards focusing on the health of the employee instead of, you know, this idea that you should be running yourself ragged and self-medicating in some way just to be successful with the industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, Max, you yourself, you've been sober from alcohol for 3 years now. Congratulations.
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
Talk to us a bit about how you found yourself on that path, or how you found the path to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So with regards to, you know, my personal alcohol use, I've dealt with depression and anxiety for all my life, and I never really had it well under control through therapy or medications prescribed by my psychiatrist. And it got to a point where I just was self-medicating with alcohol to deal with symptoms that later on I was able to deal with through therapy and through finding the right psychiatric medications to be able to help me with my depression and anxiety symptoms. And for me, getting sober and everything, I never really did any form of support group. It was all individualized therapy and, like I said, antidepressants. But along the way, you know, as I was sober more and more, the social connection of being able to feel comfortable talking about it and finding peers with similar issues or whatever it may be, I found really helped me, which kind of led me to realizing there is a hole in the St. Louis support group area that, you know, the hours of which, you know, it's not as accessible for people in the restaurant industry. You know, somebody who works a 9-to-5, they can go to that 7 p.m. meeting, but that's the prime of work time for a lot of people within the restaurant industry, which has kind of led us to begin the local Ben's Friends support group. And we met for the very first time this morning at 10 a.m.
Right, right.
And it was a wonderful, wonderful meeting, great turnout. And we feel really good about being able to bring this to St. Louis.
Yeah. So, I mean, what was that? What was it like? Is there anything that you can share about maybe how many people were there?
You know, a lot of details I do want to, you know, obviously there's a confidentiality aspect to it.
Yeah.
But what I would say is everybody who was there was in very good spirits and, you know, happy to have that space, especially where being in the restaurant industry, there are some of the similar pressures and problems that really only we will kind of experience as far as industries go. You know, it's hot, it's fast paced. And as I briefly touched on, you know, our work time is others' playtime. And that can be a hard stressor, especially early in your career if you're transitioning from another industry where you may be leaving a lot of your social connections behind to transition into it. And there's just those unique pressures that you're able to talk out and have more people relate to in a group focused like this.
Yeah. If there had been a group like this in the past, I mean, how much sooner do you think you would have started on your path to sobriety?
Oh, gosh, that's hard to say. So I'm 26 now, and I was 23 at the time. And part of the reason that I was deterred from the support groups is kind of at that age, there was a personal feeling that, you know, oh, this is a problem that really only affects people older than I. Obviously, that was a falsehood at the time. But, you know, I think there was an embarrassment factor of being so young and having that issue. And I can't say for me at that age it would have necessarily helped. But the key is now for those who may be at that age, the option is now there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you illuminating that.
Absolutely.
That insofar as what people think of as being the age at which you would have the sort of problem, right, that would require support. Now, you are, Ben, one of several chefs who took part in a pop-up dining experience last week as well. You've been very busy. So that project is called the Temperance Kitchen, and you are planning more of these. What is Temperance Kitchen? Tell us about it.
So Temperance Kitchen is a little pop-up series I've launched with four others. Ben Grant of Bijou Chocolates, Gianna West, Fortune Teller Bar, Teo Gibbs, and Adam Dove. And so we're just kind of a collective of people who have either personally dealt with addiction in some form or through friends or family have some personal tie to it. And so for our very first dinner, we were doing a coursed out format at Mainlander. Seven courses, $135, entirely tax, tip, and non-alcoholic drink pairing inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
May 20th, we'll be doing another one of those. Totally new menu based on, we're going to change it based on what's in season, what's available to us, and kind of what we're looking to play with at the time. In the future, we have some things in the work to hit some things at lower price points. Given what we're trying to do, we don't want to only stay in that high-end realm of dining. We want to really hit every price point, and 100% of proceeds will be donated to Ben's Friends at the national level to support anybody within the restaurant industry looking to get sober or find resources to help with their addiction.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that you want it to be open to people at different price points?
Just given the nature of the topic, you want to make sure that anybody who wants to support can support and just connect with different people at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want it to be such a high-end exclusive thing. We want to really capture every level of the market and connect with as many people as possible. And you can only do that by doing multiple broadened price points.
Max, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.